In the neo-post-apocalyptic wasteland, the last video store on Earth still spreads the lost art of cinema. But during the month of October, its employees and some special guests shine a spotlight on horror! Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Shocktober Spooktacular
Cyber Edition.
I am your creepy virtual avatar, Immortan Hoof. Strap on your VR goggles. Beware the creepy priest. And feast your eyes on the scintillating image of Pierce Brosnan in casual summer wear. It's the Lawnmower Man.
From the imagination of Stephen King comes the story of a man.
Go! Come on, boy, let's go. Grass is waiting for you.
With the mind of a child.
Yes, yeah, Cyboman. He came to see me.
Cyboman? Comics, right?
Yes, yeah, Cyboman.
And a doctor.
Virtual reality holds a key to the evolution of the human mind.
With a vision of the future.
I have a game in my house that you might like to play. Would you like that?
Yeah. Okay. That was really bad.
I have different games. I even have one that could help make you smarter.
Now, Job Smith is about to enter the world of virtual reality.
Ah, it's gonna hit
me! No, Job, just relax.
It's gonna be like being up there with the stars, Job. Like going to another planet.
His mind is like a clean, hungry sponge.
I just graduated to the next level, Job.
You're not the Lawnmower Man.
Oh, you've certainly changed. I don't know how you did it, but I approve.
Absorb Latin yesterday in less than 2 hours.
Job, where are you? Job.
A world where the normal course of events can suddenly turn inside out.
You realize, Dr. Angelo, that my intelligence has surpassed yours.
The imaginary becomes real.
Trying to get inside my head, Joe.
You can't hide anything from me, Dr. Angelo.
And reality.
We have no idea what he's gonna do.
Is all in your mind. Stephen King.
No!
The Lawnmower Man.
All right, fellow Cybomen, this is, I think, the third Spooktacular this year. And I gotta say, we'll talk about the movie, but I'm kind of digging this vibe of Cybotober, the special theme this year. If the first movie of the month is any indication, I think we're in for a hell of a ride this Shocktober, guys. I don't know, but...
I can't imagine any other movie's going to be quite like Lawnmower Man.
My brain's fried.
I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by fellow Cyberman, Michael.
You realize, Dr. Dave, I have surpassed you in podcasting.
Cody.
I saw God. I touched God.
And he was heavily pixelated. And finally, our old pal, Morton Hoof, a.k.a. Nick.
Mind over matter, Dr. Dave. Not a miracle.
So, Lawnmower Man. So just FYI, folks, I'm sure we'll post this on the episode, but we watched the director's cut of Lawnmower Man, the 2-hour and 20-plus-minute director's cut. And I had never seen either cut of this movie before. Is this the first time for any of you guys too?
8 minutes shorter than 2001 A Space Odyssey.
And honestly, just as like transcendental. This was the first time I've seen this movie, and it was for sure not the movie I thought it was. This was awesome. When I mean like this wasn't the movie I thought it was, I mean like I have, and maybe you guys know the movie, in my mind, Lawnmower Man must have been like right next to on the Blockbuster shelves with like a guy who gets executed by the shock chair. And by
Is it the shocker?
And then he turns into lightning or something, and he attacks people. Is that how that movie goes? I think I thought Lawnmower Man was that.
I confuse Lawnmower Man with the Cable Guy.
I mean, they're basically there.
I've never seen either. This was my first time for Lawnmower Man 2.
Just Lawnmower Man.
What?
Not Lawnmower Man 2.
No.
Right, we're going to watch that next week.
Not Lawnmower Man 2.
Lawnmower Man 2, Job's War.
Is that really what it's called?
Well, it is funny because it is a real movie, Lawnmower Man 2.
There's two titles, Lawnmower Man 2, Job's War, which is fucking great, and then Beyond Cyberspace or something
the
like
fact
that.
The fact they call this guy, that he's called Job. This
Return of Cyberman.
But that's like, I think like the covers of the Cableman and Lawnmower Man, I think are kind of like similar color palettes, and there's like electricity and stuff going on. I feel like I've seen those by each other at Blockbuster or something. And I had no idea what this movie was other than I've heard it referenced before in terms of like virtual reality. Like when people talk about virtual reality, I've heard like, oh yeah, like Lawnmower Man. But that's all I knew.
I love how Lawnmower Man is the only reference for VR for a lot of people, apparently. Oh, like Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, Beat Saber, you know, like Lawnmower Man.
What about you, Nick?
Well, back in the normal days, when Scream Factory had put out the Blu-ray, I had the Blu-ray, but I hadn't cracked it open until now. And I think, to your point about the director's cut, based on what I'm seeing, that's actually the more widely available cut now. Seems like it might be more difficult to get the theatrical cut. But yeah, so they had both cuts, and I've had it. I mean, it's one of those movies that has a weird title and it has an interesting cover. And that was back when I was buying those many movies. That was enough for me to buy it. So I've been waiting for it, and it is a weird movie for sure.
It's also, we should say, I found this out after the fact, but once I did, it's very obvious. It's a Stephen King. This is a King.
Now, Michael, you say it's very obvious, but let me tell you, I have referred to the ancient text. I in fact read
you
the
did
Lawnmower Man, and it has nothing to do with this movie.
Oh in no! Fact, wait, does it have? Thing, does it have?
It's just the title, right?
There's two things. Which is insane. The title, and then the second thing you will never guess, which is in the movie when Pierce Brosnan, when Dr. Angela comes back and finds that there's been a bunch of murders, he talks to two cops, and one cop says, "Isn't that right, Cooley? You know, there's a lot of bozos, a lot of sickos in the world." That is word for word from the book. That's it.
That's the bit that they transcribe.
Is at the end of the short story, because it's like five pages.
So what's the short story about? Line.
The short story is about a guy who doesn't want to mow his lawn anymore because he would hire a neighborhood kid to use his lawnmower, and then one summer a cat ran into the lawnmower, killed the cat, and like so he's like, okay, we won't mow our lawn anymore. I'll get rid of the lawnmower, because his wife was traumatized. And then a couple years later, he hires a guy to come mow his lawn. The guy comes, the lawnmower mows itself, and then the guy is naked behind the lawnmower eating the grass clippings. And it's revealed that the guy who runs the landscaping company is the god Pan. And then the guy goes crazy and he calls the cops, and then the cops show up and say, yeah, a lot of sickos in the world. Like, that's it.
This would have, I'm just going to guess, was this during Stephen's cocaine years?
Presumably. Stephen King sued to get his name taken off of this movie. After
several times.
Out.
I mean, yeah. That's, you know. That is literally nothing to do with this movie.
Yeah,
wow.
For
okay.
Sure.
Well, there was also a production called Cyber God, and I guess that this was mixed in with it, basically. So they just used the title, and then they and then that line again.
It does have some like Stephen King-y vibes, though, which is funny. Like, yeah, I mean, I could see Stephen King of like writing a short story that was a lot more similar to what this is.
The interesting thing is there is an antagonist in this movie, an element called the Shop, which is straight up Stephen King. That is from Firestarter. I think it might be in a couple other Stephen King books. It's like this evil organization that's always wanting to, you know, it wants like super soldiers and stuff like that, and anything it could do to promote war.
I'm pretty sure the Shop is like a known, like, slang term for the CIA. I think that's just like a known term.
Oh, well, I mean, if we're talking about in relation with Stephen King, like, there's in the movie Firestarter, the main villains are the Shop. So I just assumed that they were pulling from other Stephen King things to make like a, because it's often said that, as far as movies go, that Stephen King was kind of one of the originators, as far as like a shared universe and stuff like that. It's in motion pictures and all that in his books. Maybe not the first, but I mean, obviously comics existed.
Right. Yeah. But he did pioneer the SKCU.
Yeah.
The Stephen King Cinematic yes. Universe.
So as soon as I heard The Shop, I was like, okay. But yeah, this I you know yeah nothing to do with Stephen King, and it is funny because as you said, Cody, he had to sue to get his name removed. And when you look, when you dig deeper into the trivia, apparently New Line Cinema just I don't know lazy
did
bastards
not give a fuck.
Or what, but like there were several releases where it's like, okay, we'll remove his name from the top of the movie, but yet his name will still appear in the credits as based on whatever. And so Stephen King once again, it's like, damn it, I told you guys to take it out. So it's like the question becomes like, how expensive is it to redo credits sequences? Like to get the text in there, to get it on film? Because it's like, apparently, according to like the trivia, part of the case was like it was gonna cost New Line Cinema $10,000 a day for every day that they didn't, you know, begin the process, I suppose, of removing his name from all the cuts and videos. Because evidently there were several video releases of this, Laserdisc, VHS, whatever. And each release, like, they took his name out of part of the movie but left it in another part. So it's it took a while for them to fully remove his name from the movie.
Nobody was in control at that time, I guess. Nobody was, like, managing this movie. Everyone had moved on to their next project.
Well, but that's the funny thing was, so the thought is, like, oh, so was it just a bomb and New Line didn't care? No, this movie did moderately well. It cost about $10 million to make, and it made, I think, a little over $30 million. So it wasn't a bomb. It made money.
According to Wikipedia, we got $38
million. $38 million, and it did pretty well on video, I guess. And I got to wonder if it's due to just like the weird title and just that trailer when you see the weird VR and the guy going, "Rawr!"
this movie does have a segment that is very uniquely of its time in terms of the technology, which I mean, I could imagine there's a strong nostalgia for that at this point.
It's very vaporwave.
Yeah, this is one of those movies. I feel like we say this a lot on the show, but like this might be one of those movies, at least in segments, where you could take and play like in a club or something like that.
Oh
with
yeah,
the sound
you just
off.
Play it in the background. You play
some of
you
it.
Play,
you'd
play,
have some of it.
You play Job and Marnie fucking and turning into a dragonfly. You play that on a repeat.
You would need to like edit a different version of the movie. That's probably not the theatrical cut. Probably not the director's cut.
I'm glad
you probably
you
don't
that.
Want like a monkey being shot up.
Oh, I don't know. You start with it's hold on. So you're in a club, the bass is booming, they're playing some goth techno and stuff, and all it is flashing on the screen is like the close up of the chimp's head with the visor on.
Yeah,
and
that's
like,
cool.
Kill,
yes.
kill
That's great. But I don't want to see the monkey get shot.
But I'm glad you brought up the monkey, Mike, because that is the main difference between the director's cut and the theatrical cut. And it was funny, while we were watching it, we were all just like, because none of us had seen the movie before, so we were all sort of like wondering what to expect. And the movie opens with this monkey, this chimp, inside, like in the VR headset going crazy.
It starts with Beast Wars, and Optimus Primal has a gun.
The monkey's doing the simulation at the shop, and it ends up going nuts and kills a guy and escapes. And that's like the first 20 to 25 minutes of the movie is this monkey escaping and the fallout of it and having to get it. And
it's like a short film.
And it's like the first 20, 25 minutes of the movie. And we were all sort of like, all right, we're kind of in.
Like, I wouldn't say kind of. I was fully in.
Like a monkey going on a VR rampage in the real world. Like, it was kind of fun. It's stupid. But I got to say, as I said before, this is like the main difference between the director's cut and the theatrical cut. As much as I enjoyed this monkey rampage, or chimp rampage, excuse me, I think that as good as it is on its own, it doesn't need to be in the movie.
You know what this should have been? You know what this should have been? No, I agree with you, Dave, because we're talking about a movie that's like, it's bloated.
Two hours and 20 minutes.
This should have been an animatrix situation.
I would like, cut you put other out the lawn, stuff from the movie.
You put out the you chip. Put out the lawnmower man, but then like you put out like the Animatrix DVD if you're interested in the lore of the Lawnmower Man world.
Yes.
You got the short film of the chimp. Maybe you have like fake ads of like the VR tech or something. Maybe like another story about like the first chimp they tried to do or something, and his brain just like melted.
Well, here's the thing. I will agree that you do not need the half hour of the chimp, but it only adds to the movie, in my opinion. It only makes it better. Well, there's other stuff later you could trim up. But.
Well, definitely, yeah. I think that my main problem with this movie is that it's way too long, and it's kind of in the first act, and it's kind of, like I said, the... Oh, go ahead.
Should we? I mean, for the listeners out there who aren't about to watch a 2.5 hour movie that is, you know, ostensibly bad, should we describe what the movie is first before we dive much further?
Flowers for Algernon is what it is.
It is Flowers for Algernon. Yes. Period.
With
the
VR,
end.
or the as all the listeners will probably be aware of, it's the episode of Star Trek: Next Generation where Broccoli, aka Barkley, hacks into the computer right of the ship.
He
and
gets
like,
probed by a thing, and his intelligence goes like off the charts.
Yeah, and he becomes like he becometh a god or whatever.
But but does he become Cyber Christ? Because that's what's important to me.
Not as overtly as. Wait. Does the Lawnmower Man doesn't become Cyber Christ? Doesn't he make Pierce Brosnan Cyber Christ?
Well, in a way, in that he puts him on a cross. But I do believe they're describing something, and then Job, you know, staring into the sky, but not in VR yet. He's just staring into the sky. Goes Cyber Christ.
I feel like this movie is kind of throwing around like Job, like biblical imagery and names and other terms that just is like. It's smart, right? But it doesn't, like, if you think about it, it, like, doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I mean, this movie, okay, all right.
It's important.
It's, okay, well, first of all, kind of. No, all right, so the Lawnmower Man, right? Pierce Brosnan, Dr. Angelo, he's working on a way to take VR, virtual reality, by the turn of the century, everyone's going to live in it. And using it to enhance the intelligence of people. He wants it to be used as a way to make people smarter and potentially, though we don't find this out at first, unlock dormant parts of the mind. A classic Apocalypse Video style movie trope that the brain, you only use a small sliver of it. And once you unlock it, baby, you're psychic.
And you're telekinetic.
Yes. And so he's working on this, but of course he's working on it for an agency who wants to use it as a weapon. Roscoe, 1138, the chimp, the smartest chimp, the best chimp they've ever had in the project.
I love how Pierce Brosnan, throughout the first act of the movie, is like, it's the best chimp we've ever had!
And goddammit, he's right. Roscoe, the helmet's on, the visor's engaged, he sees the security guard's gun, he draws the gun, he blasts him, and you see it in VR.
Kill, it's so funny, because there's
like a suggestion, as the chimp is sneaking up on the guard, it's like, enhance, edge enhancement. It's almost like the chimp's like, is that a gun? I'm not quite sure. Sure, let me do edge enhancement to determine if it's it's a gun. All right, let me grab it.
Well, it's very video gamey because he's like, get the gun, get the key, unlock the door. It's funny.
It's the original Hardcore Henry.
it's kind of rad. So he escapes. He finds Job Smith. Job Smith is played by Jeff Fahey. Job Smith is a like a lot of this movie, it's problematic. And he's a simple man who lives in a shed by a church. And we're talking
early 90s simple.
No, I think we're talking, isn't this like movie from, oh yeah, it is 92. Okay, wow, 92. Tough. Tough look, guys. What are we doing?
He has the same hair, right? That Trey Parker has in basketball. Exactly. Yes. The same.
He does. And he finds Roscoe 1138. He thinks Roscoe 1138 is this comic book character that he likes called Cyboman because he has a visored helmet. He takes him in for all of 5 minutes, and then VSI, the shadowy agency, I guess, who's basically just like a video game company, but funded by the CIA, shows up to capture Roscoe. They kill Roscoe because, goddammit, Roscoe won't go down without a fight. Pierce Brosnan,
And they tear him up.
They light him up to hell. It's bad. So they, you know, they do that. Job is traumatized by this, of course. And then Father McKean, the leader of the church, who I guess also kind of takes care of Job because Job is a ward of the church. And he's also clearly a sick fuck. He's a monster. Everybody in this movie is like a bad guy except for Job and Peter, the child next door.
Cater just likes to read comics.
What about Jenny? Jenny Wright, who played Marnie Burke, the girl.
I mean, yeah, there's nothing wrong with Marnie, I guess. Marnie just wants to fuck.
I don't think she did anything.
And Peter's mom, Carla, she's chill too, but you know, everybody else in this town are monsters. Even Terry, I think it's Terry, right? The brother of
The drunk brother of the priest, yeah.
Who is depicted as Irish and drunk. And that's what are you gonna do? So anyways, right? Father McKean's like, hey, you can't tell anybody about this. Also, I'm going to beat you with a belt, Job, because I'm a bastard. The movie progresses for like another 20 minutes, and then Pierce Brosnan says, you know, I could do this again, but with a person. And so he befriends Job. He shows him some of his VR games, and he's like, hey, I could use this.
He's gone rogue at this point, right?
Yes, he's taken like a hiatus from work, and so he's at home working in his VR room, doing his falling, flying, jumping exercises.
Much to the chagrin of his wife, girlfriend?
Unclear. I believe it's his wife, but who can say?
I want to go out and party, Pierce!
He is wearing a wedding ring at one point.
Oh, yes, okay.
I give this movie a little bit of credit, which is that he comes to Job and he doesn't just like kidnap Job and start doing it. He's like, hey, there's a potential that I can use this to like make you smarter, Job. Is that something you're interested in? He's like, yeah, I guess, you know, Job is truly a kind soul. And unfortunately, everyone in town takes advantage of him. He lives in a shed. He makes a little bit of money. He gets whipped by the priest.
This is the stuff that felt very like Stephen King to me. Like I could see this being a Stephen King story.
Yeah, for sure.
And he is the lawnmower man.
Yes. He is the titular lawnmower man. That's what people in town know him as. It's like, oh, that's Job. He's the lawnmower man. He's, you know, he's the guy who comes around and does everybody's yards. Because Terry the drunkard hires him out and lets him mow the lawn while he, I don't know, drinks, I guess, and in the truck. and so he begins, you know, testing or experimenting with Job, sending him in through VR and also giving him a bunch of shots of nootropics for those in the waste who existed before the apocalypse times. Will remember those are a hot topic for Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan loves to sell nootropics. So it's funny that we came up before the recording.
That's why Joe Rogan is so hyper intelligent.
It's why he's a chimp. So anyway, so we can just cut all that out.
Is Joe Rogan's head in a jar still out there podcasting
it's
in the waste?
It's gotta be, dude. I don't think he's hooked up to any like radio waves, but you know that jar. I mean,
it's a head
is huge.
It's a head and a jar and a Shure SM57B microphone.
Perfect.
That's all that's in that jar.
Anyways, so Pierce Brosnan, Dr. Angelo, he's beginning these experiments with Job, shooting him up with nootropics, putting him through VR. He starts learning, starts getting smarter, whatever. And then he begins getting too smart. He hooks him up and he says, here, Job, watch these video discs while I run some tests. Like, do
oh,
this.
Yeah, that's the moment.
Sit with Encarta 95 and learn for a few, you know, for the day. And then he comes back a couple hours and he's like, I've read it all. I understand everything.
Yeah,
Test me.
He comes back like a few minutes later and he's like,
a few minutes later, he says, I did it all. He's like, I'm done. And he's right in that moment is when Job's like, hey, the planet's bad. I get it now. Like, mankind is evil. There's a darkness to us. And he says, how could you know that? Blah, blah, blah. He runs him through a 1700 question test. He gets 100% to show, oh, I know it all. Pierce Brosnan is scared. He says, maybe we should temper this learning with wisdom, right? Like, you can't just absorb information. That's dangerous. You have to have an understanding of it. You have to comprehend it. The internet can enhance your brain too fast. He continues, obviously. Job, at this point, he started dressing nice because dressing nice and stuff is having a higher IQ. A little rough.
And we kind of also skipped over the fact, like, part of his, on his arc to getting this smart is, like, I guess, getting, like, horny. Like, that seemed to be like a, like, it's like he's going through puberty or something.
They make a point of it early on in the movie to say that Job has the mind of like an 8-year-old or a mind of a, you know, a third grader and stuff like that. And I guess as he gets intelligent, that he matures. It's just another weird problematic thing in this movie.
There is a moment when he's like making out with Miss Burke where he's like fondling her boobs and she's like, it's soft. And then she grabs him. That's hard.
Yes, I remember that. I almost used that as my quote, but I thought it might be too distasteful. You know, you don't want something like that in the first few minutes of the podcast. I think we get...
Yeah, you
want
to wait until the wasteland will demonetize us before you drop the soft, hard line.
Yeah, that was like a record scratch kind of moment.
Yeah, that's a Dave intro. If I ever
I also it. Love how Terry, his Irish friend, who was always drunk, is like, "Go for it, man! Go for it! She's into you, man."
There's another character in this town, Jake, the Harley Harley Davidson shirt wearing Harley gas station.
Because this
asshole.
Movie needs more things going on.
It needs more things going on. This guy is a total bastard the whole movie, but he has one like shining moment of like, hey, this guy's all right, which is Terry says that Burke puts her ankles up for every boy in town, and he's like, hey, man, don't call her a whore. And he's like, what, a whore does it for money? And Jake is the only, like, Jake is, in that moment, Jake's like the guy who's right. He's like, hey, man, leave her alone. Like, there's no reason to be mean about this, Terry. And Terry's like, I'm just saying she likes it. It's fine.
I've got the hots for you, Joe boy.
You gotta be kidding me. She's just teasing this halfwit. Look at him, you're gonna be dressed up like a fool.
No, no, Jake. I've known her ever since her husband died. She's been kicking up her heels at all the young studs in town, and I tell you, she wants this young fella.
Don't you call her no whore around me, old man.
Whores do it for money. She's got money. She's young. She does it because she likes it.
This movie is weird. Anyways, keeps going. Job gets too smart. He becomes, realizes that humanity is terrible because he's learned everything about humanity. So he keeps going into VR. He keeps repeating the cycle, enhancing his brain, doing the drugs. And then there's a turn, which is that VSI, you know, Dr. Angelo's company, they're in contact with the shop, the CIA. They say, hey, this is going great, whatever, we don't care. We need to start Formula 5 again. That was the stuff that was being used to turn you not just into a smart, not enhancing intelligence, but making people into super soldiers.
Super soldiers.
Killers. Exactly. Mind control. As the opening scroll of this movie says, hey, people think VR could be the future, but it could also be another form of mind control.
Because, of course, this movie has an opening scroll.
Yeah, it has to.
I forgot about that.
Virtual reality will change the world.
So, Dr. Angelo's boss, the prick, he juices him up with Formula 5. It tampers Job's hyper-intelligence with aggression, and he becomes, I don't know, he doesn't really, I guess he becomes the Lawnmower Man 2.0 or something. He becomes, whatever.
That would have been a good alternate title.
This is where I
think,
honestly, the movie loses a little bit of steam, and then it keeps going, and okay, he's going to get captured by the CIA, he's not capturing, now
this
he has psychic powers.
This is where the movie kind of picks up for me, honestly.
I think it slows down, but it picks up, but it's like kind of like a, I get it. Like, either go bigger or... It's
when it starts to become interesting, because it starts incorporating I like all the VR stuff, but... When, you know, Job gets his powers and is able, in real life, is able to turn these guys into, like, little molecular spheres or whatever.
VR spheres.
I love that shit.
There's some weird,
opens up his shirt and there's, like, an abyss.
Yes! It's so crazy. It's like a meat portal in the CIA agent's torso, and then he disappears into a pixel tornado. Yeah. That part is cool, don't get me wrong.
I got to applaud not the visual effects, but what they were wanting to do with the visual effects, because like that moment. I mean, granted,
you saying like you applaud the idea, not the execution?
The idea, not the execution. Like, just because that is such a crazy moment when the guy opens up his shirt and it's like this weird meat portal, as you said, and you're not expecting to see that.
Yeah.
You're not expecting to see a guy be like spontaneously combust and turn into VR bubbles. Like,
the VR bubble stuff.
Or VR bees.
Yeah.
The end of the movie. A bee assault. VR bees, which I guess they kill those soldiers at the end? It's not really clear.
I was asking myself, I went through a series of questions when the bees showed up. I'm like, first, okay, are those bees? Second, are the bees real or do they just like, are they visual illusions or whatever?
It's mind over matter, Nick. He spawned them out of nothing.
This is like, oh, they are hurting those guys.
Well, because it just comes off that they're like, it's an annoying sound that they're like, ah, you know what I mean? For the most part, you don't see one of the bees like physically attack a guy. They're just swarming around them.
I think
and
like
just a little thing that I love is I love that he gets the idea for the bees because the Irish guy has this bumblebee plush on his dashboard.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
bees. I'll turn him into bees.
He says, my new power, bee kinesis. I have become bee destroyer.
I've been doing way too many spontaneous combustions and turning them into VR bubbles. I want to try something else. I don't want to be stagnant here.
I think like this is a kind of like a good part. So I was thinking a lot about this movie after we saw it because it seems cool, and every like thing we talk about, like every scene, if I think about it, I'm like, well, that was cool. Like,
well,
that was
because Job is in your mind now, like all of us.
Well, I think, and but
yeah,
I didn't
real quick, let me finish the movie. He goes on a revenge rampage, and then Dr. Angelo has to come and C4 blow up the mainframe. Job is meanwhile trying to get into the mainframe so he can hack into every cyber network in the world. You think he's been stopped, and then the end of the movie, the phone rings, and you realize, oh my god, he's out there.
The phone rings everywhere.
Yes, because that's what Job says he's going to do. He's going to get in the mainframe, and then from there, get into 5,000 other networks, and then every other network, and then all his birth cry will be the ringing of every telephone in the world.
Job's the like, answer your modem, turn your modem on, I'm calling, because it's dial-up internet, it's only 1992.
Someone pick up, please. So I think, like, the thing about the movie that, like, it makes me think of I think it's a Quentin Tarantino thing he said, but it was something like, the gist of it is that like, if a movie feels long, it's usually not the length, it's bad at editing. And I think that that's like the thing with this movie is the pacing is all wrong. And I think it's the editing. Like, I feel like it's sort of like one scene to another, and it just doesn't have a good flow or pace to it. And maybe the theatrical is different, but I think that's it. If I think about this in isolation, most scenes are like pretty fun, but the experience of watching this movie felt like a little exhausting by the end of it, you know, like not to be too dramatic, 100%. But I was like checking my watch, you know, like a lot towards the end of this movie.
Yeah, when in the last hour is when it does pick up steam. That's when he's going to go on revenge. That's when he's become Cyber God, and he starts like sending psychic lawnmowers into people's brains and smashing glasses and stuff.
Well,
like that.
Well, that was just his lawnmower that he made, his souped-up lawnmower, and that his lawnmower
big red or whatever.
Holy cow! Like, if you're watching a horror movie and it's called The Lawnmower Man, even if you don't know it's about VR, at some point you're like, somebody's got to get killed by a lawnmower, right? And
we all did the Leo gif when the
oh my god, well, because it's crazy because it's just a lawnmower, it's not like a demon hellspawn lawnmower, it's just a lawnmower, but somehow it just it eats up everything as it's trying to kill this guy in his house, and eventually the guy runs outside, the lawnmower shoots out, and somehow, as if there was a ramp there, ramps off, and like, I guess the suggestion is that it like lawnmowered the guy's face, I suppose. It picked up some air and lawnmowered his upper torso.
I think it got him.
Oh, yeah, he got him.
He gets got.
He got mowed.
We don't really see it, which is weird. Because come on.
Yeah, they don't.
Let us see it.
Yeah.
Lawnmowed the guy.
But even to an even better visual is when he creates the cyber lawnmower.
That's what like, I was referring to.
Lawnmower, oh, that
like,
one.
Mowing
of
the
course.
Brain.
Yeah, he's like, I gotta suck your brains out with
That's
my lawnmower.
Like when it does that weird shit, it's really cool. Like the sex scene, like the cyber sex scene when
love,
they're melting
that
together.
So weird.
And that was
like,
cool. Very cool.
Reminded me a lot of Reboot, the show.
Very much,
because that is very much this era of CGI for sure. When like, so that's the thing, right? So Job goes on his revenge thing. He starts with the priest. Father McKean starts praying like, oh, I've been a bad guy. And he reveals all of his sins. He's fully a monster. He you know, admits to molestation and all sorts of terrible things. And so Job sets him on fire. Awesome. Great.
VR fire.
Well, I mean, I think it's just CGI fire.
That's like a cool shot, too, of like the church where it's like panning up to like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's cool.
Yeah, he's up and he's got the stained glass behind him.
It's very comic booky. Like I could see these being like panels in a comic book.
Speaking of the editing, Mike, I think that it's kind of that pacing thing, which is like it starts with this kill, which is really cool. Then the next kill is Jake, which he just ties up with gas hoses.
And it's kind of like just like a shot. Like, OK, we saw that. Now here, let's see this.
And then he cyber lawn mows, but not, we don't see anything happen. So it's kind of like a high note, then a not as high note. I think the cyber lawnmower idea is cool, but it's like, oh, this isn't as gnarly as I would expect it to be because he has that lawnmower right next to him. You're looking at that. And you're like, it's going to happen. Then he gets the lawnmower on the neighbor who's Peter's dad. He's an abusive drunk. He's a real piece of shit. So he psychically puts Peter and his mom, Carla, asleep upstairs so that they don't wake up and know that he is mowing the fuck out of their first floor home. And then who does he go after that? Oh, after that, he goes to Dr. Angela's house, turns his wife into the 1950s perfect housewife, which apparently is a part of the director's cut. In the theatrical cut, she leaves him when in the scene where she says, oh, I'm going out with the girls. She's leaving him for good, which makes more sense because at the end of the movie, he's immediately like, hey, what's up, Peter and Peter's mom? I'm with you now. My wife means nothing to me.
Well, she got killed in the director's cut. So,
well, yeah, but I mean, Dr. Angelo moves very fast. I guess that's virtual reality for you.
That was a shocking ending that where he's just like, all right, I guess we're just married now, I suppose. Is that cool?
Peter's my son, so I guess you're my wife. Is that cool? Yeah, good wild stuff. Absolutely absurd movie.
Yeah, to speak more on the editing, like I agree. Like I think you're right, Mike. Like overall, like a lot of the scenes are good. Like are fun to watch on their own, but like the connective tissue between them just feels off. And like I said before, like I think a lot of the problems with this movie are in the first act. And believe it or not, like looking in the trivia, I just on paper what the theatrical cut is. Like I might prefer the theatrical cut because as much as I like the Cyberman stuff, like. It's not necessarily needed. All you need to know is, like, the monkey gets killed, like, Pierce Brosnan doesn't have his subject, and now he needs a new one. Because, like...
I think the reason all the Cyberman's and Job's introduction with the chimp is superfluous, I would say, is because his change and his arc doesn't really matter in that emotional level. So like he starts out as the purest guy. Right. And that's how he's able to befriend the chimp because he reads his pupil and he's not a threat or whatever. So I think that's the moment the movie's saying, okay, this guy is a pure angelic character. Right. And now we're going to see him get corrupted or whatever.
He's
whatever,
an innocent.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, the impact of that he changed so much doesn't really feel secondary or even third. And so that's why I don't think we probably need that beginning, though it could serve a purpose.
I think the purpose it serves is that without that extra half hour or whatever, nothing happens in this movie for an hour and change. Like no crazy virtual reality stuff really happens until, you know, cause we see Peter playing cyber games and it just looks like they're playing Reboot, like flying around in gliders and stuff, but we don't see any violence or scares or anything until Job goes bad. So it's kind of like they front load 15 minutes of like terror, you know, of this rampage so that you're like, hey, this movie has action, right? You're gonna
there's almost
it'll
like
come back,
no,
we swear.
I was thinking about this because before, like for an hour or so, even with the chimp stuff, it doesn't really feel anything close to like a horror movie to me at all. It's just science sci-fi and stuff like that, and that's fine or whatever, but I was like, I was waiting for, because I mean,
waiting
I know
for the for the priest to get lit on virtual fire.
Waiting for something. Waiting. Yeah. And then finally kissing the gear and stuff like that. But yeah, I think the movie, it's kind of lopsided in terms of what it's going for at on the different halves of the movie.
Like I was counting it, like he doesn't begin the process of like, maybe I can use this guy as my test subject until 40 minutes in. It takes 40 minutes for really the story to kick into gear, which
is just
unacceptable.
You know what they should have done? I'm going to Monday morning quarterback the I think the way you do it is you have like in parallel. Like he's like Pierce Brosnan maybe is like, I'm gonna try and do the Lawnmower Man stuff. You open with that, but maybe like the chimp stuff is also happening. I think this is like Flowers for Algernon, right? They have the mouse who's like going with him, and like the chimp just early on starts getting all messed up. Like his whole cycle is like way quicker. So you can like get to like the crazy stuff like 20 minutes into the movie, because the chimp is like exhibiting it before him, and then it's like, oh, we gotta shut you down now.
But at that point it's too late to stop, right? But it gives you that kind of shock of like, oh no, this is what's happening.
Yeah
I could see what you're
saying. I think probably you could even if you don't get rid of the chimp and Cyberman stuff in the first 40 minutes, like there were times when we're watching this movie where I thought the movie was caught in a feedback loop, because we get so many scenes of like that dumbass boss like talking to Dean Norris from Breaking Bad, like big brother on the screen. I think we should do it. I don't think we should do that, sir. I think you should do it. Okay, sir. And then that scene repeats a few times.
I gotta say, that actor Mark,
who plays Tim's,
was
terrible.
I mean, he was distractingly bad for me.
Yeah, same.
He reminded me of that guy. Oh, I don't know his name. There's a comedian that he reminds me of, but just at a terrible
Joe Rogan.
No,
he said a comedian, Mike.
Oh my God, burned him. I don't know why Joe Rogan's really on the brain right now.
You get that scene repeat a bunch of times. You also get the scene repeat in the beginning or in the first act where Brosnan is always talking to his recording thing that's like, beep, mm-hmm. beep, beep. He's like, oh, my research. Oh, I don't know if I should do this. Next scene. Oh, God, I don't know if I should do this. My research.
The voiceovers in this thing. Oh, like,
geez. I'll be honest. And even just talking about it, I'm like, I like that shit. I like because here's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of like Dracula or Frankenstein, where it's like you have to have these like journal entries from the one character being like, I did this and now I'm realizing my error. It helps build this like dread. It doesn't do it as much in Lawnmower Man, but just like in general, I like those kind of
things. I was getting like Blade Runner, that like dummy edit where they're like, we have to have Harrison Ford talking because there's too much like just slow stuff. Well, that was the vibe funny. I was like.
It's ironic because these are types of scenes that would absolutely being a Stephen King book. They would have action and then the chapter would end, and then the next chapter, the little interstitial short chapter, would be his like journal entry or something.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
This is a Stephen King movie, let's just be frank here. It is Stephen King's.
Yeah, I'm
the
reading
Lawnmower
this
Man.
was Stephen King was like very proud of this movie and was like, bury me, you know, put on my epitaph like Lawnmower Man and like maybe The Shining or something, but like
he was the one who fought for director's cut, right? Because
what the fuck is happening? This bit, I'm abandoning. Dude, this bit,
guys.
Right? What is
Stephen
happening?
King is going to sue our podcast. You got to be careful with what you say. Okay, this is slander right now. Like, no, it was not Stephen King's The Lawnmower Man.
Who is the like fault? Who's Brett Leonard? Brett Leonard's Lawnmower Man. Okay.
What's this guy's filmography look like? I'm wondering what his journey is leading up to The Lawnmower Man.
Oh, he made Virtuosity.
Oh,
this is,
wow.
This is
so
only his second
lane.
Movie. Is Virtuosity also on our Shocktober list?
It could have been. It's not, but it could have been. It's a cyber thriller with Russell Crowe and Denzel Washington, right?
I guess he was an early adopter of IMAX 3D.
Okay. So he's a complete visionary, and we should all respect him for that. All right.
He is Cyber Christ. Brett Leonard is Cyber Christ. That's all there is to it.
I always hear people talking about him in the same breath as James Cameron.
Always, dude. Thank you. Finally, someone says it. JC, BL, they're right up there.
Oh, yeah. Who can forget his 1998 classic T-Rex : Back to the Cretaceous?
Honestly, great film. I'm pretty sure it had an incredible SNS tie-in game. But in 2007, he directed Highlander the Source, and we all agree that the Highlander series has no bottoms. It's only peaks, no valleys.
It's flawless.
God, we should cover all the Highlander movies on this.
While we're talking about artists with questionable talent, I was shocked. Uh-oh. I don't know
who you burning now, David.
Well, no, and it hurts me to say this because I think otherwise he's a good actor. But I mentioned Dean Norris earlier. He plays the head of the shop, or at least some higher up in that agency. He's mainly depicted in the movie in like a Big Brother context. His face is on this giant screen that the nerdy boss at VSI is talking to. And I don't know what Dean Norris is doing. There was a split second at first where I was like, maybe this is a dub. Maybe they dubbed him, but I don't think it is. Dean Norris is putting on some sort of voice.
It almost seems like a British accent.
It almost seems British, but not quite, where it's just like...
Nah, it's something so strange. I totally agree with you, Dave, because I was like... Because first I didn't recognize him because of his voice. It was so strange. Then I realized who it was, and then I'm like, but his voice sounds wrong.
Angelos, like all brilliant types, erratic. But we tolerate them here at the shop as long as they perform. And Angelo has certainly done that. Project 5 is very impressive.
Mr. Director, without Angelo, there is no Project 5.
Well, he'll be back. One way or another.
It's almost like he's trying to do a, it's not like the mid-Atlantic, you know, accent or anything, but it is like this, like,
yeah,
it's almost like a posh,
yes,
like,
it has like an air of sophistication to it.
In a way, the boss in RoboCop.
Of the head of OCP?
Yeah, like, I remember that scene where he's on the TV and he's like, you know, you're probably on your knees about now.
Oh, that guy.
Life.
Now, well, that leads me to an interesting question. I'm sorry to derail it, but RoboCop versus Job, who wins? You know, like,
RoboCop.
Oh, Job.
Interesting. Look, RoboCop. You jump so quick. One to RoboCop, one to Job. Let's all
right,
real quick.
Job has to win, right?
We got.
Well, they're both cyber Christs.
both cyber Jesuses. Mike, I will give you the floor for 1 minute. Put your argument for RoboCop.
Okay, so Job has no formal training. RoboCop is, like, trained to be a killer and aggressive.
Job literally knows the universe because he read it all.
Exactly. But he has no wisdom. RoboCop RoboCop has wisdom. He's been crucified. Job has never been crucified. He hasn't gone through that experience. RoboCop has. He has the dedication.
But he surely read the Bible. He knows.
Look at Job. Job on
but
a straight
he doesn't
power
have the wisdom,
match,
Nick.
You, if it's a lifting competition, Job wins. But in a real war fight to the death scenario, RoboCop has the background. He is the experience. He's killed before and he'll kill again.
Okay. All right, everybody. Okay. Great. Your minute is up. David, we need your 1 minute on Job. Now, audience, Nick and Mike, we don't need interruptions. We want to hear a pure 1 minute of argument for Job here. Go ahead, David.
Well, as I thought more about it, I might have to retract my statement and say RoboCop because... hold on. It's not because of anything Mike said, although I think you did bring up some salient points. The problem is, and I forgot about this, when Job goes into the VR world completely, he loses control over the physical world. And I think that's where RoboCop bests Job. So I have to retract my support for Job. I'm sorry.
What's Job going
to
do?
Don't
call
apologize
RoboCop?
To me, David. Apologize to yourself. You have no spine in your argument.
I sold out Job.
You immediately turned code on Cyber Jesus.
Well, I
and it made me laugh so hard I almost
powers.
Blacked out.
Like, he literally, there is a very cool.
You next, Dave.
There is a cool moment in the movie where when Job, towards the end in the third act, he's like, I'm going to go fully into the VR world and hook up to everything. His body literally, like, shrivels up.
No, it disappears. The suit is empty.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan,
opens
the thing,
David,
and it's like,
How does Job get killed in the physical world when he doesn't exist in the physical world? He can just jump into RoboCop's mind.
No,
so this
because
is where
RoboCop
you have to decide
has,
which level, you know, which
RoboCop has his data spike. He could jack in and inject a virus into Job.
If he jacks in,
Job
that's a fucking death sentence. Job is the virus. Yeah.
RoboCop is a closed system. He doesn't have to worry about Job.
So
that's not true.
It sounds like Job just had the wrong defense here, this debate. Like, Cody should have been the one defending Job.
Well, I just don't understand how you jumped so quickly to defend Job and then immediately fucking fell apart. Well,
it's because
under a single...
have a fundamental misunderstanding of the VR world. I don't understand its complexities.
A single pound of pressure from Mike and you folded like laundry, bro.
You are a fake disciple of Job.
Well, to be fair, we never see Job walk on water like we do RoboCop. RoboCop, you know, the proof is there.
Thank you. Thank you.
I will say Job has a great look when he does when he's walking around in the cyber suit. And
it's cool
like,
looking.
It's lighting up when he's using his powers and stuff. I'm like, this, I want to see a remake of Lawnmower Man. I want to see it gnarlier. When he molecules people, I want him to like just turn into gore tornadoes. I don't want him to disappear into cyberspace.
Really?
I want him to float. It's almost Akira-esque, and I want...
When he starts learning
the power to like cause blisters on his hand,
there's a version of Lawnmower Man that could have been directed by Cronenberg or something.
Exactly. Yes. I had that thought exactly. It's... This is almost like a proto version in a way of Cronenberg's existence, and I think even a little bit of The Fly too.
There's some Videodrome, I think too.
Yeah, for sure. And he would be a perfect guy.
I didn't think going into this movie that by the end I would be saying, you know what, Lawnmower Man was ahead of its time.
To be clear, Dave, I'm not saying that.
Well, no,
I
think
Cody's on.
You
want to backtrack, Dave? You want to backtrack immediately?
No. I think, Cody, you're onto something because, like, again, the general idea, I think, is kind of fun for, like, a B-horror movie. You know what I mean? And if you do it nowadays, now that the effects have caught up with the idea, I think it could be, you could see some cool, gnarly visuals that wouldn't look so overtly bad.
I think, though, that's part of the charm is, like, that this is so vaporwavy.
That's
also,
true.
Also, like, how do you do this flavor. Idea now? Like, Who do you make the Lawnmower Man? Like, how do you handle that?
Jeff Fahey, bring him back.
a great question. I truly don't think you need Job to be a like problematic depiction of a mentally handicapped person at the start of this movie. You don't need him to start from that.
It could be anyone who gets turned smart.
He doesn't need to be 90s simple.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be 90s simple.
He could just be Joe Rogan.
He could be a kid. He could be Joe Rogan. He could be a kid. Like, I think there's a way to do that part that's completely kind of, you know.
It really doesn't even feel like a needed ingredient to for this arc to happen.
Yeah, just,
I mean,
it could just I mean, be like anyone about, like, who's it, like,
it's not,
you know,
it's
just
not
normal
so dissimilar
dude
than
or...
Lucy. I mean, put some drugs in her and she transforms into this cosmic being, or even her. I mean, I was thinking, because I just rewatched her, the endings are kind of similar. They both go into the ether and like become, you know, these... cosmic beings, cosmic cyber beings or whatever. So I don't think it doesn't really even matter who the Lawnmower Man is in a sense. But really, I think I don't have any problem with any of the effects. It's really just like the balls to go weirder. Go,
yeah,
as
that's what
said,
I wanted.
Cyberer.
Yeah. Weirder, grosser, cyberer. That's
cyber-er.
What I want.
Yeah. I'm totally on board. It just takes, you got to have a little bit of balls.
I wish Job, like once he committed, I wish he wasn't walking. I wish he was floating everywhere. And
oh,
just,
yeah.
Like, yes. Truly, just have his, on even like if he wants to be in, yeah, Mike has a cross, he's in a cross pose flying around. Yeah, maybe, why not? Fuck it, who cares?
Maybe he's like, he's dragging around a cyber crucifix or something.
I'm listening, okay.
A cyber crown of thorns.
There is some stuff, honestly, that like, when Dr. Angelo comes to fight him in VR and he puts him on the cross, there's stuff in this movie that I'm like, damn, this kind of reminds me of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh, 100%.
The same thing.
It's 100%.
There's cool shit in this movie.
When you guys were talking about the Mike was saying it, I felt like the religious aspects that came into play, so things like Job, we got the crucifix, even when the first guy in like introduced the VR stuff, there's those symbols from like the Book of Solomon or King David
when he's
Solomon
when
or
he's
whatever.
Flashing the thing,
yeah,
yeah. So, it's like casting a spell
here, but I was thinking it is basically, it's in my opinion, the bad version of Genesis or Evangelion, because and in that sense they're more committed to that imagery and stuff like that, where here it's just kind of like, oh, it's cool or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just a little bit more liberal with using that kind of imagery and stuff like that. It's just less effective. But I was thinking the exact same thing.
Can we talk briefly about the the dress requirements at VSI, because I don't know if you guys noticed. So the VSI, it's kind of a little nebulous as to far as like it's because there are armed guards in VSI, but like it seems as if there's a little bit of a disconnect between VSI and the shop. Like the shop is in the movie is kind of portrayed as like they're like a third party that's kind of interested in what VSI is doing, but
is
yet,
the shop more like military and VSI is more the like virtual reality
private
program.
Sector type thing or whatever is kind of the vibe I got, yet they have armed guards. But what I'm getting at is Pierce Brosnan throughout the movie consistently is like talking to his boss and everyone who works there like, fuck you, no, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. Like, he's very indignant. And also probably the main thing that caught my eye is it just always casual Friday at VSI? Right. Because okay. Pierce Brosnan okay. is always wearing shorts in
two
this
things, David.
Laboratory.
Two
it's weird.
First, to your first question, no, we can't talk briefly because that's impossible for us. All we're going to do is talk at length. Second of all, what do you fucking talk about? His fit is immaculate in this movie. He's got his shorts. He's got his fucking cardigan or his sweater on and his like 90s hiking boots. And the dude's living his life. When you, David, when you are creating a virtual cyber Christ, you can wear whatever the fuck you want. That's okay. That's the beauty of being that high well, on the like in VSI.
He's dressed like eccentric scientist.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. He's dressed as eccentric 90s scientist.
Because that is a trope in a lot of movies like that deal with, even up to today, I would say, like, eccentric geniuses. Like, he goes into the office and everyone's in button-up shirts, whatever, but he's in his shorts and he's got, like, his shades on. He's like, Brent, hey, guys.
Brent Spiner in Independence Day.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not just a trope in movies. I think it is a fact of reality. If you are a person who adds value in some other way, they let you get away with more things, you know? There was a time in my life when I wasn't wandering the waste looking for loot and treasure and lost Blu-rays and fighting off hordes of mutants when I had to work in an office. And because I was in the quote-unquote creative area, I was allowed to have a raggedy beard, long hair, not wear button-up shirts ever, often wear like shirts that are open way too much down to the middle of my chest, and never wear shoes. Never. I never wore shoes in my office ever. And you know what people said? Not a fucking thing, because they're like, oh, he's a part of that department, he's allowed to be this way.
Oh, don't mind him, he's just part of the creative department.
Yeah, that's honestly
those bastards over at creative. Meanwhile, I'm stuck over here in this cubicle. My soul's getting drained. I can't unbutton my top button. I'm choking here.
That's like, yeah, I'm so sick and tired of wearing the Apocalypse Video polo every day for work. Why did you have to get me extra, extra, extra large, Dave?
Because it's the only one that would fit me, and I'm not working here anymore. It's my hand-me-down shirt.
You know my size is child's large.
Okay, well,
listeners don't realize that Mike is only 4'6".
a lot of stuff I had at Bartertown really stunted my growth.
I gotta say, the Lawnmower Man episode's given me a lot to think about, not just about the movie itself, but
how you should run your shop.
Yeah, how I should run the store. Maybe I should loosen up the dress code requirements here.
Yeah, let's have no shoes.
Let's have shoes. Let's keep the shoes.
No shoes. Yes on shorts.
So yes, Dave, to answer your question, we can talk about his fit.
God, I'm going to show up tomorrow for work and the new dress code is just going to be no shirt, no shoes, and cargo shorts.
Just cargo shorts.
Can we... Oh, so here's a question for you guys to get back to the movie. Was the ending, the dark ending, effective for you at all? Where all the phones start to ring, the realization, oh no, he did get in.
I think that's like a fun way to do it. And it's kind of like open-ended in a weird way. Because you kind of think like, what does that even mean? Like, all the phones are ringing? Like, what?
What is he going to do now?
Yeah, I kind of like that. That it's just like insane and weird. And like, it does leave it, it makes you... I think it's a good ending for a movie like this because I think it leaves you thinking about, like, what would that mean? What would happen?
Well, I think it's your point again, Mike. To me, this is just really bad editing because it sounds cool on paper, looks good, all that stuff, but it just doesn't come across. Like, because I was, it's just like, I don't know, there's no dread or anything. It is ambiguous, but it's also like...
You start to see, like, computers turn on their own stuff. That
it's
might
very,
be
like, it's filmed, this way is, like, filmed or... yeah, maybe even edited, is just very matter-of-factly. Like, it's like, that's kind of like what this movie, editing-wise, is kind of saying, I think, the whole time, is like, this happened, then this happened, then this happened.
Yeah, very much so.
Very stagnant.
Yeah, I didn't dislike the ending. It seems like it's like that's, you know, it's the way these things go, right? Is like, oh, okay, the villain does succeed, but we can't really know what the next thing is. So isn't that scary? Because the movie's kind of setting up technology as being this potential fear. So now it is. But 100%, we see that first phone ring with Dr. Angelo in his basement, and he's staring at it, and you're like, oh shit. And then it cuts to a cityscape, and there's a bunch of phones ringing everywhere, and it goes to different places, and you're like, yeah, I got it. You didn't need to show it. Like, if they had just shown that, then there would be that ambiguity. It's like, is somebody just calling him or all the phones ringing? Which I'm not saying that's better, but I'm just saying that is one choice. Or you show everything ringing and it just kind of, you know, I don't know.
You see like a computer monitor.
Yeah.
Like you see like a computer monitor. Maybe even in Angelo's basement, he looks up at his computer monitor, it turns on, and suddenly it's Job's face, his VR face. Like, eh.
Yeah. Or just, you know, just says like hello or something. Yeah. Like,
hello, Dr. Angelo.
Because yeah, I, you know, what is he gonna do next? You know, I do like.
I'm gonna order a bunch of pizzas and send them to your house, Dr. Man. Angelo.
Diabolical joke. Oh no, I hope it's not meat lovers. I love. There's a thing that happens in this movie which I'm like such a fan of. It's like, when the hero, the only way the hero can like fight the villain is to get a bag full of bombs, and you're just like, that's what I gotta do.
Oh, you know.
He gets that all moment, that C4 from the shop, and you're like, I guess.
That moment was actually kind of cool. Like after, that's the moment we kind of referenced it earlier. Like, so Job, the lawnmower man, basically mind controls Pierce Brosnan's wife to shoot some of the shop guys that are coming after him. She gets gunned down, and then, you know, Job leaves, and Pierce Brosnan has to go find him. But as he goes to try to find a car to chase him, he notices that like the steering wheels are like melted by what looks like tar or something.
No, the plastic of the wheel has melted.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, it's like melted. And then he looks like the wheels are melted. Like it was actually kind of effective. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool.
And when that happened, Job appears as just a giant golden head.
Yes,
which is so sick. It's so sick.
And I like that he doesn't really say much. All he does is just sort of like look, like glare menacingly.
Yeah,
he just looks at him like,
honestly, it's, like, that shit's cool. There's like, so much cool shit in this
to
movie.
Speak to his glare, like, that was one thing I kind of, like, I was like, whoa. Like, earlier in the movie, like, we mentioned the Harley Davidson guy. He's, like, giving Job some shit after he's like, oh, I think you look so cool in your cowboy boots and you look like a quote-unquote normal person now, huh? Like, he shoves him to the ground, and Job just sort of, like, shoots back this glare at the Harley Davidson guy, and suddenly the guy's like, oh, God, oh, shit. And it's, and it's like, the suggestion is like, you know, like people are starting to notice like, oh, he's acting completely differently. Like he, you know what I mean? And I got to give Jeff Fahey some credit. The glare that he shoots back at this guy running this shop, this like tune-up shop or whatever, it's effective.
Well, Jeff Fahey has great eyes. Also, he's a stud in this movie.
Oh,
right?
Like, yes.
Just absolute. Yeah.
And of course, Jeff Fahey, if you don't know, Frank Lapidus from Lost.
Of course.
I'm sure everyone listening knows Frank Lapidus.
Everyone also a bad list. Guy in Psycho 3, by the way.
No one cares about Psycho 3. We care about Lost.
That's not Job's boat. That is not Job's boat.
Oh, Frank.
Well, Shorts was kind of... Pierce Brosnan's Shorts was like the one thing I'd underlined and asterisked in my notes.
That was the one thing I want to talk about was the Shorts situation.
What about you guys? Any other thoughts on Lawnmower Man before we get into recommendations?
Pierce Brosnan has a wonderful earring. Just want to add that. Again, I think Pierce Brosnan's fit. His look the entire movie is great. Honestly.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan looks good in this.
It's amazing that he made this movie in 92, and then a few years later, they're like, yeah, we'll give you James Bond. That's pretty wild to me, I kind of think.
One thing we should note, I thought was interesting, he is chain-smoking Pierce Brosnan throughout this entire movie.
It was the 90s, Dave.
I don't know if there's one scene where he doesn't have like a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Like,
quits at the end, remember? So that's important.
Oh, does he quit?
He's speaking to his recording. He has a cigarette in his mouth and he's about to light it. And then he just holds the match and lets it burn out. And he puts the match into the cigarette down and he stops, you know.
So really this movie is like a really effective anti-smoking campaign.
Yeah, Dave. Yeah, that's what this movie is.
I guess, you know, it really goes to show, like, the current state of cigarettes in our time, because, like, that I would notice that in the movie, like, wow. I mean, it was like Mad Men level of smoking from Pierce Brosnan in this movie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you forget how bad everything must have smelled back then.
Like, honestly, I was thinking, like, in the beginning, like, after the thing with the monkey goes down, or it's about to, like, Pierce Brosnan has this nightmare, and he's in bed, and he starts smoking next to his wife, and rightly, his wife is like, oh, God, I hate it when you smoke cigarettes in bed, you asshole. It's like, your breath is terrible.
Yeah, but Pierce Brosnan and his wife's relationship was...
It's not needed for the movie. I think, again, I think point theatrical, where it's like, just get her out of the movie because she serves no purpose otherwise.
I couldn't tell what the movie was trying to make me feel when that scene was happening, because he was, like, confessing his soul about this haunting nightmare he had, and she's just like, I hate it when you smoke in bed, and just, like, their relationship was absolute shit, like, the whole time, and there was nothing to it. It just, like... It didn't even seem like he was driving her away. It just felt like they hated each other from the beginning.
Well, and there's a weird...
So they have that beat. There's the moment where she's like, you said you would do this. And he's like, oh, you didn't remind me. And she's like, fuck yeah, I did. And he's like, all right, maybe. I don't want to go around. You know, like, he's not invested at all. She's not invested at all. But it doesn't... Yeah, there's no blow up. So you're just like, either not have this relationship or lay it on more so that there's a reason to have it. Just be shitty, as opposed to she's shitty, she leaves him, and then he gets with the neighbor.
The movie doesn't even care, like, when she dies. Like,
well, he does the titular no in the movie, but that's it. He immediately gets with the neighbor lady. It's like 20 minutes later.
The titular no?
Yeah, I'm glad you called that out, Mike.
Oh, come on! Like, that's a thing in movies when a character dies.
Yeah, but do you know what titular means, Dave?
Oh, not titular.
We're talking
about
something called the lawnmower, man, not no.
I'm sorry, the tropey moment when a character goes, no! When a character dies. I'm sorry, not titular. The movie is not called, no!
This isn't Jordan Peele's Nope.
Yes, Stephen King's No!
Darth Vader's.
No. Oh, I love the moment when Pierce Brosnan says the title of the movie after his wife gets killed.
Amazing.
No! Lawnmower Man! well, I don't know about you guys. I'm kind of torn as to whether or not I'd recommend this, because
I'm
not
torn in the slightest, bro.
Yeah, I'm not
easiest
torn.
Easiest recommend ever.
Easiest
really?
No.
Wow. Ever. You're recommending too, Mike?
No, absolutely not. I'm an easy no.
Oh, easy no. Okay, no. Okay, so that's
watch,
one no. From
watch,
Mike.
Watch like a YouTube ApocoTube clip of the VR stuff and like some of the kills, but I don't know. This movie's too much of a mess.
Here's the problem,
and a slog,
Mike. You can't just take in a bite-sized version of the movie. You don't have the wisdom that goes with it. Okay.
It's true.
I think this is a movie that is more fun to think about and talk about than it is to watch.
But how can you think and talk about it without spending the time with it first?
You can't just do what Job does. You can't pop in a CD for 5 seconds, listen to it, and be like, yeah, I got that song.
There's too much to listen to.
I'd say if that is something that appeals to you, then watch it. If you want to if you want to join the conversation, then you should watch the movie. But I don't think you need to join the conversation.
All right, Nick, what about you? Where do you fall?
I think it's a pretty safe no.
Come on, don't you want to mow some lawns? Let's do this.
It's like, I don't know. It's just a big old, if you like big old messes.
Yeah, I would say this is like, this is better than Southland Tales, I think, but it's like that. It's like that, you know.
Well, there's an appeal here for some audience. I do believe that sincerely. Like, and I think that this definitely like checks some boxes, like early 90s stuff. I think it has some good tropes there. The FX that's going on, or the effects, I like that stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Honestly,
it's
I
fun.
Think it's I think it's of its time, but in a good way, and so I like it. But it's just it comes so far in, and yeah, there's a whole hour or so of the movie that really just doesn't have a lot of interest to me.
This is kind of a special recommend for me. It's one of those asterisk recommends. I think it's the type of recommend where it's like, it's a movie you got to see once, I think, just to see it once. And then if you don't like it, whatever. But I recommend watching it once just because there's some interesting stuff in this movie. Like you said, the vaporwave effects have an interesting charm to them. And there's a lot of interesting choices going on. Well, maybe not interesting, but there's choices going
absolutely
on.
Absolutely interesting. This
well,
movie,
no, I was going to say, like, specifically, like, Dean Norris and his weird accent that he's doing. I don't know what that's about. Like, you know, I think it's interesting enough to watch at least once.
You know what I'll say, though? I have this morbid curiosity to see the second one. Because, yes. Like, what happens yes. to Job? I
got to know.
I am more.
Did anybody
curious.
Pick up the phone?
Can't wait.
I also agree with that sentiment. Maybe, you know, for next year, Shocktober.
See? How can you be so? No, absolutely not. When you're like, but
you know what we
is,
should do? I mean,
the hooks are in me.
I'm just going to throw this out there as a net, not in the near future, because we got a stacked lineup coming at you hot. But it could be a fun thing to maybe do like a little mini film festival where we find sequels to movies we've seen.
I was just going to suggest that, but for next year's Shocktober, it's all the it's like,
I think we already did, though. I think last year's Shocktober was part last 2. Year's was,
yeah, we started, we watched the sequels before the original movies.
Did that happen last year? Time means nothing out here.
It was sequels. We watched twos.
I think you were deep in the hunt for Avatar 2 at that point.
We have watched.
Don't you remember Cody Maniac Cop 2?
what a film.
See, what's the line?
You remember Ghoulies 2?
Yeah, oh, what's the line great. That Robert Downey says at how the end of that movie where he's like, it's a very thin line between a lawnmower man and a cyber Christ or whatever he says. I don't know.
Very thin line between.
I was making it
a
lawnmower
man
reference.
Lawnmower
man
too.
Yeah, there's a thin line between a cop and a maniac cop.
Yes,
there's a single digit between lawnmower man and lawnmower man too.
Yes, and then from that point on, you're beyond cyberspace. Well,
heading into unknown dimensions.
I will say this. Even if you end up not liking the movie, you will probably have a fun, spirited conversation with your buds afterward. And that's what I think this episode was. This was a very fun episode. I had a lot of fun with this movie talking about it. And you know what? Hell, this might be a movie. I'm interested to check out the theatrical cut. I want to watch the sequel.
Dave is going all in on Lawnmower Man.
This is what I'm talking about, Dave. This is exactly the right passion. Why didn't you have it a minute ago? Stop flip-flopping. Commit.
Are you joining the Mowerhead forums?
This guy starts Mowerhead. And he's like, I don't know. You know, it's a special recommendation. And then by the end, he's like, everybody should see it once.
I got to track down the theatrical cut.
Do you guys think the virtual reality Job looks anything like Jeff Fahey? Like maybe the eyes, but you think, you know, that's
yeah, 100%, one for one.
Do you think they worked on that before they shot the movie because it takes so long to render out? Like, you know, it's just
it looks like a Mario Party version of like a distorted face that you would kind of pull apart.
Yeah, oh, like the mini game where you're like pumping the balloon up and it's like your face.
No, though, isn't there like one just where you drag like his nose?
It's the opening of Mario 64.
The opening to Mario 64 where you just can mess around. But you're right, it does look like that. Except
Lawnmower
that
Man
looks
predicted.
That
Mario
64. Mario 64 intro looks better than than this movie.
Oh, well, it had several years and it had, you know, the thing is pioneers often don't look the best, you know, but they bring something new to the table that everyone has to recognize.
Right. And yeah, I don't think Miyamoto was involved in the Lawnmower Man. You can't undersell the importance of Miyamoto.
You can't, by dismissing Lawnmower Man, you are dismissing the whole DIY movement.
Wow. That wow. is
honestly. Excuse me. I think I would like to enter the conversation. My name is George.
Is that George Lucas?
Is that George?
We were talking about pioneers. I thought I would lend my hand to the conversation.
Shut up, George.
No.
And that's where we'll leave you, folks. Cybertober will return with Lily Cat. I was waiting for someone to meow.
Accessing database.